So I want to begin with some, we're going to talk about cultivating, and I want to begin with some spiritual connections. Let's have a prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you that you have given us work to do and the work in the garden. We pray that you would bless as we study and learn now. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. So in Genesis 1:28, it says, God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. And in Genesis 2:5, it says, and there was no man to work, or the King James says, till the ground. And that's speaking about before there was a man. Yeah. And in Genesis 2:15, it says, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. Again, that word work is till in the King James. I said my mind kept going back to those first chapters of Genesis, and this is one of the things that I was wondering about. What does this mean? What do these verses mean in the context of a perfect world? Now, there was something that God created. There was a work that God created man to do. But if we're in a perfect world, why do we need work? I mean, it's just, my mind doesn't go that way. I don't know how you think. But, this is where God saw everything and he said it's very good. And yet, there was something man had to do. Yeah. So, I believe that God doesn't do anything aimlessly or purposelessly. He has a purpose in everything he does. So if God gave man a work to do, there's a reason for that. What was it?
A ministry.
Pardon?
A ministry.
I think
those are all true things. They all have jobs. Yeah, I'm sure of that. Because just as God, God created us in His image, just as He is not purposeless, just as He has. Everything he does has purpose and meaning. Just think, if God spoke frivolously, what would happen? It would be kind of scary, wouldn't it? I mean, when God speaks, things happen. And we don't just want frivolous, whenever God speaks, he has purpose. So, and our words have... we don't have that same creative power that God does, but our words have creative power. There are so many stories of some kid in school and the teacher calls him a dummy. That word has creative power on that kid, doesn't it? And so we have to be careful ourselves. We are in God's image. If God is not frivolous, we also should not be frivolous. It doesn't mean we don't have fun. There's a difference there. But we need to be careful. So one thing that, you know, as I was thinking about this, one thing came to me, and that was that when God created the world, remember what it said in Genesis 1:1, or is it 2? The earth was without form and void. So it was a kind of a chaos, right? You know, it's not organized. And God came down to this unorganized earth, and He began to organize it and put things in order for the purpose of life, right? And again, in God's image, He intends us to do that work. So I have come to the belief that, you know, when we look out in the, you call this bush here, we call it woods. Scrub.
The woods is different. You can put a Roman century or woods where woods or bush or...
Okay. All right. So if you go out in the bush, on the surface, there's a kind of chaos, right? It's not organized. Now, underlying, there is an order. You know, God in all nature, there is an order, but there on the surface, it's not organized. There's a randomness to it, and I believe that the work God gave us, I believe that was the case even in the Garden of Eden, and that the work God gave man to do was to organize that, and our job in organizing that is to make it more fruitful. You know, the natural world is fruitful and it does bear fruit, but not on the level that can sustain us easily. I mean, there are tribes who live in the jungle, but they need a wide territory to range through in order to sustain themselves off of just the natural land. But for most of us, we have a small piece of land. You know, I think the garden, I really don't have any idea how big the Garden of Eden was, but it didn't fill the whole earth. You know, God created two people, Adam and Eve, and He put them over the whole earth, but He gave them a garden that they were to manage. You know, it was something that they were capable of managing. And I feel that this idea is supported from with a quote in education that I really like this quote. It's from the chapter on manual training. And of course this book Education is written to teachers or people who are educating, so just keep that in mind. In our labor, we are to be workers together with God. He gives us the earth and its treasures, but we must adapt them to our use and comfort. He causes the trees to grow, but we prepare the timber and build the house. He has hidden in the earth the gold and silver, the iron and coal, but it is only through toil that we can obtain them. Show that, this is where she's speaking to teachers, this is something we're to communicate and share with others. Show that while God has created and constantly controls all things, He has endowed us with a power not wholly unlike His. Okay, again, this is going back to the idea we are created in His image. To us has been given a degree of control over the forces of nature. As God called forth the earth in its beauty out of chaos, so we can bring order and beauty out of confusion. And though all things are now marred with evil, yet in our completed work, we feel a joy akin to His. When looking at the fair earth, He pronounced it very good. Is that right? You know, when you manage a garden well, it is very satisfying to stand back and look at it, isn't it? In fact, I've noticed that there is something, and I think this is true for a lot of people, but there's something in me that finds a landscape where people are managing the earth in a good way. We find that very attractive, right? I mean, I'm thinking of like in America we have these people called Amish. Do you have them here? I was just wondering why they haven't come here. Is there? Yeah, because they value large families, and so they're just growing by leaps and bounds in the U.S. I heard that they're starting a new settlement in the U.S. every 2 days. And they're just because they're growing and most of the American population isn't, you know. And I think, you know, it's because they have this connection to nature and to God, and they recognize the value of being fruitful. Yeah, it's a positive outlook on life.
And I remember we found that store on Fayetteville, and I think it was the Toronto Outreach.
Yes, we actually have we have several from that background who are Sabbath keepers in our area, and we worship with them. In fact, one of them, his land, he was living on and farming land that belonged to his father, and they practiced shunning, and so that means the community won't have any relationship with you if you are out of line. And so this family, when they started keeping Sabbath, the community shunned them. And so nobody could... It doesn't mean that you can't talk to them, but you can't do business with them. And living the lifestyle they live, it is very important for them to be able to do business among themselves. You know, they're a kind of a self-sufficient community. They need each other. Yeah. And so he lived there for a number of years in that condition. But at some point, I don't remember why, his father felt he needed to sell the land that he was on. And he couldn't go anywhere in the community because, you know, he didn't have finances to buy his own place yet. And so it just happened that we had a place at our farm that he could come to, and so he was there for a few years. So, I was talking about. So Americans are very attracted to going to Amish communities. Partly, I think, you know, just the simplicity of life, but also I really believe there's this attraction to seeing the land being managed and people working, you know, on it. And I think the same for example, I've been to Switzerland, and so you have these rugged mountains, but to have little farms carved out on them, it's really amazing. And in Yemen, where we lived for 6 years, you know, it's on the Arabian Peninsula. It's a mountainous country, very steep up and down. And we were working in an area on the Red Sea. They have a plain on the Red Sea, and then the mountains come up behind it. And we were working in three districts from the Red Sea back to where the mountains began. And we had a mountain that was in the third area, the third district that we were working in. And the first time I went up there, I was just, my mind was boggled. For one thing, looking up at the mountain, all you could see is that it's just rocks, you know. And we in the southwest of the United States, we have mountains like that, and you just know nothing can live there. You know, there might be a snake or two, or you know, a few creatures, some little rodents or something, but nothing can live there. But they told me there were people there, and it was just hard for me to believe. So, anyways, on the first trip up there, one thing really amazing was that they had made the road by hand to get up there, and it was. You know, straight down here and straight up here, just enough room for a single vehicle. And it was like a 3-hour drive. We in 4-wheel drive, low 4-wheel drive, first and second gear, you know, just creeping along, boom, 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 up the mountain. But we got about halfway up, and all of a sudden, here's these terraces with mango trees and date palms and sorghum growing in the terraces. It's just, there's life there. And it was just, wow. Now, how does that happen? And then when we went on and here were more, it opened up and there were more terraces and fields and farms and villages and all the way to the very, very top of the mountain. From where we live, we looked up at that mountain. And there was kind of a square rock on the top, I thought. But that was a house, and I went in it. I slept there on the very top. And they had springs just a little bit, you know, below that house. And yeah, it was. I asked them, how do you get springs on the top of a mountain like this? Because this was a mountain that it was kind of by itself. It just came up out of the. And they said, God put them there. And what could I say? Yeah, I guess he must have. Yeah. So
that. That country, Australia, we have springs that come up out of the base of gum trees.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, a little spring that flows, and there's some trouble. It could be from here, but wood later.
Uh huh.
And
it's
also a big because it's full of water and then it disappears again. Yeah, wow. It goes down to a certain rock level and then flows through, like, filters through the rock, goes all the way through, and something falls down into the rock. Yeah. And it has after eating more, some more.
Wow.
And the springs would be on the side of the gym, you know, like, pop, nothing around. Just
Really?
The
high
water. Uh-huh. And it just scrubs down, and that actually does go down to the
SPC
basin. But it's, maybe you might not have rain for 10 years, but it's
still be washed. Still
water coming out.
Wow.
There's a couple of hundred meters.
Really?
We always had a spring for our house there,
huh.
And there's nothing there. It's just in place. Nothing.
Uh-huh. Wow. Yeah, you know, how God created things is really amazing. But anyways, I feel that God put this appreciation for, you know, where man is managing the natural world for fruit. There's something very, very attractive about that.
Yeah. He even manages that within the ecology. I heard recently that the bellbird.
Uh-huh.
Too much because of the bush turkeys get around scratching the ground like out there, and if they're not there anymore, the velvet disappeared because I stayed off where the
Interesting. Yeah, so that's the relationships I was talking about again. Yeah, everything's connected like that. So, both before and after the fall, the work that God gave us to do was the same. To organize and manage the garden and the natural world for good fruit. Both literally and figuratively. So this is dominion, and it involves subduing. And also, it's something that takes creativity and imagination. Now, you have a bare piece of land. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to organize it? What are you going to grow? You know, there's so, you know, every person is going to, that's like a canvas. You know, you're going to make your own picture there. And so, you know, if this labor wasn't what came to us in the fall, if that was something that God gave us to do from the beginning, then what was it that came to us in the fall? Well, just, you know, when God gave us dominion, He gave us dominion over the creatures and therefore over the plants. And so when Eve ate that fruit, you know, Adam and Eve didn't have, when we're talking about how we have dominion on this earth, remember, it's within the realm of God's dominion. They were, because God created them, they were under his dominion, right? And so when Eve ate that fruit, she was rebelling against God's dominion. Is that right? And so what happened when she did that? God put the dominion that's under us in rebellion against us. Does that make sense? So, you know, he's giving us a taste of our medicine. You know. Yes. 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 So what came with sin was the weeds, thorns, pain, sweat. Right? Yeah. So the work was the same, but I mean, we had the same job to do, but the work changed because these things were added to it. There was nothing taken away from what God gave us to do. This was added to it. Well, I think he was. I think he was.
And
right.
So yeah. They were sort of working in with training as much, but not how we have it. So
right.
Yeah, that was all people training.
Yeah. So, you know, to be honest, I have not been able to come with a complete picture on what they did, but it was, I feel I can confidently say it was organizing things and managing things for more fruitfulness. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I think there was decision making. You know, we need this tree to be here, and we don't need these things. You know, it's, yeah, exactly. And, you know, like I said, I can't explain how all of that worked, but I think it encompasses those ideas somehow. So there, you know, like I said before, God has a purpose in everything He does. So when He added these things to our labor, there was a purpose for that too. And that purpose was to train us and to discipline us, right? And so when I first understood this, I you know, it gets quite hot where we live, like it does in a lot of places here, and it's generally quite humid too. And so we'd be working out there just like I stepped out of the shower, you know, drenched. And then it hit me that, you know, God said that you will sweat. And so that is God's will for me. And so if I'm here in this condition, that means I am in His will. And that feels good. You know, so that's His purpose for us. And in Hebrews 12, verse 11, it says, "For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant. But later, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." I believe that's God's will for us. And so as we work to subdue our garden, training and disciplining it, bringing it into submission to our dominion for the purpose of fruit, so at the same time, God is working to subdue our hearts. Remember, we said there's a connection between the land and the heart. God is working to subdue our hearts, training and disciplining us, bringing us into submission to His dominion for the purpose of fruit, the peaceful fruit of righteousness. That is God's will for us. So, let's talk about weed control. I want to talk about cultivation versus weeding. Do any of you know the difference?
I think of cultivation as digging up soil and weeding, pulling the weeds out. But I probably got it wrong.
Yeah, actually, the word cultivation does have a broad meaning to mean just working the soil, but there is a narrower meaning that's applied to controlling weeds, and that's the one that I'm working on here. Cultivation, well, weeding happens exactly. Weeding happens when the weeds are big. And, you know, when weeds get big, it takes a lot of work to manage them, you know, to take them out. That is really true. That is really true. We have a saying. 1 year seeding means 7 years weeding. So that is a really true thing. Whatever you do, you don't want your weeds to go to seed. You know, if you're desperate and you just can't get in there to take care of them, at a minimum, if you see they're starting to head, at a minimum, take a lawnmower or a weed eater and just mow them down so that they have to start over again until you can get in there and actually take them out. You know, the thing is, they're persistent. Just mowing over them isn't going to stop them. I've noticed with dandelions, and I think all weeds do this, you know, dandelions will initially send up a long stalk with a flower on it, but if they're mowed constantly, they don't do that anymore. It's the same plant. It's not a different species. The same plant will have a little flower down below the level that you mow. They learn. I don't know how, but they learn. they learned that we can't reproduce up here, so we're going to do it down here where we can get by. So, and I think almost every plant is going to respond somehow like that, especially weeds. So, and while we're talking about this, there's a concept here that is really significant, and that is the concept of a weed seed bank. This isn't necessarily the kind of bank that you want to bank on. In fact, you want to get rid of it. But the idea is that as weeds seed, those seeds work their way into the soil, and especially as the soil is worked, it can work the seeds down further, but also at the same time, it can bring seeds that are in the ground to the surface. And so that's why every time you work your ground and get it bare, you've brought up a bunch of weed seeds that are going to want to germinate up near the surface. So that weed seed bank can be exhausted if you never allow any weeds to go to seed. But it's going to take you 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. And you know, you can't control weed seeds completely. They'll float in, they'll come in on an animal or on your shoes, or you know, they'll get in there. But you can reduce it significantly. But it's going to take time, and you have to be on it every year, not allowing them to go to seed. You know, we even keep the perimeters of our garden mowed, because you know, we don't want the weeds that are close, you know, the ones that are close by, they can get their seeds in. So yeah. So and there's another lesson here, that the ground does not like to be naked. Okay? It is always going to try to cover itself if it can. I mean, the only places where it's naked is where it doesn't rain. You know, otherwise, it's going to try to cover itself. And so it's going to do all it can to do that. And so that's another reason for working with things like cover crops and mulches, because the earth likes to be covered. You know, leaving the traditionally there's been the practice of plowing fields in the fall and leaving them fallow over the winter. But nature doesn't like that, and it's not really the best thing. You'd be much better off in a lot of ways if, rather than leaving it fallow, you sowed it to a cover crop. And then you'll be ahead in the spring by a long way.
We've got a terrible weed. And it's sort of like a bowl, and then has little white seeds underneath the ground, and then has brown seeds. And once you get the dirt all around it, those brown seeds are dropping off in the ground. Yeah. And then it shoots up with a flower, and all those seeds drop in as well. I did my rose garden 3 times 1 year. I thought I've got them all. We threw out bucket loads of soil, just trying to get them all. And it's sort of like thin. It just keeps coming back. In the end, I thought I've got all the seeds, and there's these little strings, almost like translucent, and I think they turn into seeds of some other game. Just maybe.
Wow. Yeah. So weeding is dealing with weeds. But cultivation is dealing with seeds that have just germinated. You know, they first send out a root, and then they send up a little shoot with a leaf. And if you get those seeds somewhere between when they send down the root and when they send up that shoot with the first two leaves, if you can get them sometime in that time period, your work is going to be so much easier. And this is what we call cultivation. Okay? You can do a whole garden bed. You can cultivate a whole garden bed with a lot less energy expended and sweat than just, you know, two or three well-established weeds. Yeah, it's a big difference. And, you know, again, a spiritual application. In the Bible, seeds are equated with thoughts and ideas. You know, there was the sower who was sowing good seed, right? And so, but not all seed is good. In the next parable, there was the landowner who had his servants came to him and said, "Who sowed tares in the field?" And he said it was an enemy. So, you know, there's a good sower sowing good seed, and there's an enemy sowing bad seed in the soil of our hearts. And it's so much easier to take care of seeds, those weed seeds in our hearts at this stage rather than this stage. You know, when they get this stage, like you said, they might have gone to seed or you know, a lot of weeds. If there's a little bit of root left in the ground, it grows into another weed. We've got a number of weeds like that. Just a little tiny piece of root grows into a whole new plant. And so, you know, that's another spiritual application there. So we call dealing with seeds at this stage, we call that the white thread stage, because of that root going down. It's just like a little white thread. And when you're cultivating, you're wanting to do it very shallow. Okay, why would that be? Yeah. We wanted to cut these ones off, you know, cut them at the roots or at least expose them, bring them to the surface. But we don't want to bring up, you know, we've got that weed seed bank again. If you dig deeply when you're cultivating, you're just bringing more seeds to the surface. You're making more work for yourself. So if you can just, you know, we're talking about the top half inch of soil. You're not wanting to go deeper than that at this stage. And, you know, you really can do it even before the leaves show.
So what if they already got the established weeds to get to the cultivation part before they're going to, yeah, full of
You have to take them out, and it is hard work, and you have to if you remember one of the videos we showed yesterday, it showed with a shovel just, you know, scraping them right below the surface. They're deep, yeah. And they have runners under the ground, and yeah, we have grasses like that too. And one was, we called Johnson grass. It was imported for fodder. And I think there's a lot of people that would like to get their hands on Mr. Johnson. Anyways, those are more difficult, definitely. One thing that I like to do with them, and we also have some ones that just have a long taproot. And if just a little bit of that taproot gets left in the ground, they'll regrow. So the best tool I've found for getting those out is a spading fork. Because you can put it our taprooted ones like that, and even the ones with the runners, if you try to pull them out or chop them off, you didn't do anything. Yeah, it looks good for maybe a week. You feel good about that for a week, and then but if you use a spading fork and just put it in next to it and loosen the earth, then you can pull it out. And with those ones that have runners going under, I'll loosen the soil and try to gently pull it out so that I'm not disattaching the runner. And then if I can, I'll follow the runner and loosen the soil along where the runner's going and try to get up as much of it as I can. That doesn't always work. Some always break off, but that's what I try to do.
So you're mulching, actually,
yes.
Go on driving to mulching over grass areas, you put the new fence down and then put the land mulch and everything that will, kill the grass area.
Yeah. That is, that can work. What I have found for these deeply rooted grasses that have runners is that, we're going to come to that. Let's just wait because I have more to share. Yeah.
Do you just, how do you get that little one out? Do you just get a little shovel and just?
Well, we have some tools that work really good for that, and they're not available here except that Rod has imported a bunch of tools, and I'm pretty sure. Are they demonstrating them right now over there? Because I want to, I'll bring some over here. Yeah, that would be great. So there's one called a collinear hoe. It has a long handle, and it's a little piece of metal on the bottom here, and a thin blade.
Yeah.
You saw that. This is the nicest tool for dealing with this. That is the best thing. It's lightweight, and you hold it with your thumbs up like this, so it's not back breaking. You don't bend over. You don't need to bend over, and you can cultivate beds and beds without hardly breaking a sweat. It's really nice.
And
no, you can do it. Push it and pull it both. Just work around. So, we'll have our bed and it's really nice with transplants. You have your transplants and you can just work around them. Because this blade, it's attached here in the center, you can have plants here with leaves coming out and you can work right under the leaves and quite easily. And get, yeah. So, and you can, this is, with this tool, you can do the shallowest cultivation. The one thing that you have to be aware of is that this tool is not strong. And so it is, usually when you have plants at this stage, that means you have a freshly worked bed. And so the soil is loose. You have to have loose soil for this to work. If your soil is hard, you're going to break the blade trying to. If you try to do any chopping on weeds, with this, you're going to break it. It's not made for that purpose, and it won't work. And I'm speaking from experience here. And it's not a cheap tool, and you don't want to break it, or you'll break your bank. So I think it's something like 30 some US dollars.
They just got it sent from the US.
Okay. Great. Okay. So that one is good for that. There's another tool. So this is called the collinear. There's another tool called a stirrup hoe. That has a long handle again, and then it it has a shape kind of like this, and this point here is loose, so it oscillates at the base of the handle. And this is the blade here. Okay? And so, again, this blade is sharp on both sides. It's a two-edged sword. Okay? And so, with this one, you have to hold it this way with your thumbs down. But you can work it back and forth. And this, to me, is the ideal tool when your weeds get a little bit bigger. When they're about that size. You can't even use it on weeds this size unless they're the kind that you have to dig the roots out. It's a much sturdier tool. And I would, if you could only afford one tool, I would probably recommend this one because it's going to be more versatile for you. At least, just the reality is, even though our ideal is to get weeds at this stage, life happens, and that doesn't always happen. So, you're going to be probably better off to get this one if you can only get one. Though another disadvantage of this tool is that it doesn't get under plants quite as easily as this one does. But it's a good sturdy tool, and it's not going to break easily. And these blades are replaceable. When they wear out. It takes on our farm over 5, 6, I don't know, something like that, years of, regular use, some of those blades have worn out. So, they don't wear out quickly.
You can sharpen them.
And you can sharpen them, yes. You can sharpen them. So, those are our two favorite cultivators. Now, there's another tool called a wheel hoe. Trying to remember. Yeah, and when I showed you the video of the bed preparation, the bed making, I think my daughter was using the wheel hoe to clear the weeds, and that is a really nice tool because you can cover a lot of ground quickly with that one. So those are some of our favorite cultivation tools. So some things to think about when you are looking to buy a tool. Look for tools that are sturdy but lightweight. Okay? You don't really want to have something much more than 2 pounds. When I was in college, yeah, so it would probably be, yeah, just under a kilo, yeah. So, when I was in college, I decided I wanted, you know, I wanted to work overseas, but I also wanted to get some farm experience. I knew a lot of the people I'd be working overseas would be farmers. So, I was in Southern California, and at that time, La Sierra College had a farm. And so I decided to work on the farm for a summer and get some experience, and as well as take some classes. So I told the director of the course what I was wanting to do, that I was wanting to, you know, prepare for going overseas. So he paired me up with an older Cuban gentleman, and this man must have been in his late 50s or 60s. I'm a young college age kid, you know. So I don't remember the first or second day he took me out to weed. He had a bunch of melons, like cantaloupe melons and things like that. And so we started cultivating around these melons. The tool that he gave me was a, you know, a traditional hoe like that. You know, the big kind of a square blade. And it had a metal handle. It was a pipe. And I'll tell you, By the time lunchtime came around, you know, this guy was working, and, you know, like I said, he's an older gentleman. I'm a young kid, and I could not keep up with him. I could not keep up with him, but I was trying. And by the time lunchtime came around, I went inside and just sat down at a desk and just looked at my lunch. I was too exhausted to even eat. I was just wiped out. And anyway, you don't want to replicate that if you can. Pardon? He did have a lighter one. He had a wooden handle, but he had a, you know, it was a big, you know, blade on the end still. Yeah, I was a student. You know, I hadn't been working like that either. And he, you know, he was accustomed to that. Yeah. So another thing is to keep your blade sharp. You know, you mentioned that you can sharpen them. That takes a lot of the effort out of work. And then put your tools away clean. You know, if they start rusting, that they don't go through the soil as clean and easy as when they're not. And so clean them, and then also the handles. If you leave them out in the weather, they'll dry out, they'll get brittle. You know, so we like to oil our handles with linseed oil once a year at least, and then try to keep them inside under cover for storage. So, is it break time now? I'm getting the feeling that it is. Yes.
I'm just wondering, this is cleaning of the tool. Would you use water or just sort of brush the dirt off?
We generally use water. Yeah.
And that doesn't accelerate the rusting?
Well, if you, the ideal thing is to have a place where you can hang them up. And if you can hang them up, then they'll generally dry fast enough to not, for that not to be a worry. Yeah. Okay, so after the break, I'm going to talk about different measures of weed control. There's a number of different strategies for controlling weeds. We'll talk about that next. So let's take a. I think.
Selling the
weed
trees in there, and he was selling a packet with tears and wheat and red clover on it.
Oh, really?
As like a brown cover, and he just chop it off and let it burn brown.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's a new concept to me.
Yeah, I'm not new to that concept, but I am new to the mix of seeds. I haven't heard of using chia like that. Yes. This is the stirrup hoe, and you can get three different sizes of stirrups. So this is the narrowest one, and so, you know, of course it's handy when you have vegetables planted in rows fairly close together. But then you can get another. I think this is 3 inches, and I think a 5 inch and a 7 inch. So you can get different sizes. And you know, I would go with the medium-sized one if you can only afford one. But
I have it worked.
Oh yeah. You just do it like this. Yeah. So, and it, because it oscillates like that, it gets the weeds coming and going both ways. So you save half the labor of a hoe where you can only get them going one way. Yeah. That's very nice. And also, you know, with that kind of hoe, you have to lift it up every time you're doing a chopping motion. This one, it's just a back and forth motion. Yeah. So that's a labor saver. And then this is the collinear hoe. And as you see, there are two different sizes for that too. And so again, this one is good for closer spacing. And this one, we use this way. You hold it, like I said, with your thumbs up. And then you're just going like this. So it's very easy to use. One thing I should say is that this one here has all of these have replaceable blades, so that is an advantage, you know, so you don't have to worry quite so much about breaking them. And not only is the blade replaceable, but this thing here on top that it's screwed into, usually with the ones that don't have replaceable blades, where they'll break is right here. And so this will help to prevent it from breaking. But the disadvantage is that the head on the screw in the ground, it collects, you know, especially if you've got a kind of a clay wet soil, it'll collect dirt on it, and so it doesn't slide through the soil as easily and cleanly as the other one. So there are pluses and minuses on that.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Yeah,
if you can weld and you could do that on the other one.
Yeah. So what's the difference between using the steel and the collinear? Where would you use them?
Yeah, I was sharing with them already. The collinear I would use with weeds at this stage, that somewhere between when the first root has come out and when the first leaves have come to the surface. And I wanted to say, I wanted to emphasize that you can do this before you even see any weeds. You can take them out. And, you know, if you have a clean bed that you've just worked. And if you either water it yourself or it rains on it, within you can know that within 10 days to 2 weeks, you're going to have these weeds coming up. And so, you know, at about 10 days, 11 or 12 days after you prepared that soil, even if you don't see weeds, you can go in with a collinear hoe and just work that top half inch of the soil, and you'll take these guys out. And I've done that before, and you know, was only able to get part of the area done, and then I had to go and came back a week later, and where I hadn't done it, the weeds were like this, and where I had done it, there was maybe a scattered weed here or there that I, you know, hadn't caught, but it was essentially clear. So you can get weeds before you see them.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.